Episode 812. As week two of Green Bay Packers OTAs are set to begin, we discuss some of the team's most notable players and their future. We do so with Cheesehead TV's own Chris Peterson. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans, and welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV, the longest tenured Packers podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, and today we're talking about Packers OTAs. To do that, we're joined by a guest on the phone.
Baltar, find me another expert, one that likes me this time, okay?
We're joined by Cheesehead TV's own Chris Peterson. Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Brian. How are you today?
Very good. Glad to have you joining us this morning. Following interviews with David Nicholson and Chris Wanless, Chris Peterson is the third in a series of interviews featuring the newest Cheesehead TV writers over the course of OTAs. And Chris, do you just want to start by letting our listeners and readers know about your background?
Yeah, sure. I would love to. I actually live in Montana. I'm a Packer transplant out here in Big Sky Country. I've been following the Packers basically, you know, since I was 2-3 years old. It's my grandpa was a Packers fan. My whole family are Packers fans. So that's kind of where that started. I grew up watching Brett Favre, and you know, he was my idol. And then I, you know, continued to really follow the team with Aaron Rodgers. And then when I got out of high school, I started writing about sports for my local newspaper, and then I just kind of started taking my passion as a fan for the Packers, and kind of started turning that into blogging. And I've written for a bunch of different sites, the Bleacher Report. I have my own site, PackersGuru.com, that you know, that I put a lot of content up to. And now I've come over to Cheesehead TV, and it's been a really great experience, you know, getting to know, you know, all these Packer fans and to see, you know, all the great knowledge and passion that we have for all our readers. So that's been really awesome. So basically, you know, my day job is I write about local sports, and, you know, and then with every other kind of free moment I have, it's all about Packers, you know, reading, you know, watching old games, and at this point, just waiting for August and September to come around.
Yeah, well, welcome to Cheesehead TV, Chris, and best of luck as your career progresses. We've got a lot of Packers content to talk about today, and we're going to start by talking about Aaron Rodgers. Last week, Aaron Rodgers told a local newspaper in South Carolina, the Spartanburg Herald Journal, I believe, that he thinks he can play until 45. I'm going to briefly play this clip of Aaron Rodgers here. It just lasts about 10 seconds long, but so everyone can hear where we're coming from. He said this last week.
Any more sense of urgency now as you get older, or did you always have that from the time you stepped on the field as a rookie?
That's how they were until I saw Tom at the Derby, asking how long he's going to play. Kind of subtracted that, my age, from the age he's going to be at when he finishes, and figure I got about 12 more years left. Yeah. So
There you go. The Tom of Aaron Rodgers refers to, of course, is Tom Brady, who we apparently saw at the Kentucky Derby. If you follow social media, you may have seen pictures about him. But getting back to the question here, Chris, do you really think that Aaron Rodgers could do that, play to 45 years old, or do you think he could hurt the Packers franchise in his 40s by trying to do so?
Well, I mean, it's a tough question. You know, I think maybe 10 or 15 years ago, you know, the idea of somebody playing until, you know, 45 years old seemed, you know, pretty radical, especially, you know, as a quarterback. But, you know, if you look back, Warren Moon, for instance, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he started and was pretty effective, you know, I think up until about age 42. You know, Brett Favre, he, you know, obviously as Packer fans know, was pretty effective up close into that range. But I think that Aaron Rodgers, you know, looking at Tom Brady, I think that kind of is the best example. And, you know, you look at Tom Brady right now, and to me, I mean, somehow, some way, he seems to be getting better at this point in his career, and I'm not sure how that's possible. So I think with Aaron Rodgers, I really think it depends if, you know, he's going to continue to put in all the work that he's doing, taking care of his body. I think that's the biggest thing. Sports science and sports nutrition have come so far, you know, over the past couple of decades, that I do think it's possible for him to at least play effectively up till around the age of 40. I don't know if he's going to be able to go those extra 5 years. And I think at some point, you know, it's going to obviously get to a point where it could be a kind of a reversal situation with how it was with him and Brett Favre, because, you know, if he is going to be playing up until he's about 45, you know, obviously the Packers, kind of like they did with Brent Hundley, like the Patriots did with Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to invest in those young quarterbacks. And so I think as long as the Packers do that and Aaron Rodgers, you know, continues to play at a high level, I don't think it's going to hurt the team. Where I think it's going to hurt the team or the organization is if, you know, Aaron Rodgers' play starts to slip and the team, or whoever is, if McCarthy is still the coach at that time, I that would be a long time for him to be, you know, the head coach as well. As long as they can, you know, continue to hold Aaron Rodgers to the same expectations, you know, I don't think it's him hurting the team. I really do think, you know, he's going to have to make some changes, but, you know, one thing that last year I remember that made me feel he was pretty committed to taking care of his body was when I remember reading something about how he'd given up eating ice cream. And, you know, to me, giving up eating ice cream is a pretty big deal. I wouldn't do that for my job. So if Aaron Rodgers continues to make those type of sacrifices, he may be able to play for a very long time.
Chris, another Aaron Rodgers question for you here. He was on the recently released roster for the Jordy Nelson charity softball game this upcoming weekend, an event he's participated in several times in the past. But are you concerned at all that one of the highest paid players in the NFL and the top paid player on the Packers roster is risking injury, however remote?
I do think there has to be some concern there. You know, I've wrestled with that. I don't know if you can really go to Aaron Rodgers and say, you know, hey, we're not going to let you do this, or, you know, we don't want you to play in this charity softball game. I know that, you know, that's a big deal to all those guys. And they, you know, all the Packers, a lot of the Packers players, you know, try to do things in the community. And so I would hate to kind of take that away from him. At the same time, you know, you're right. I mean, we've seen over the years guys get hurt playing flag football or doing weird different things. And as we all know, as we saw in 2013, if Aaron Rodgers isn't playing the Packers, you know, they're not the Packers. I don't care how good Brett Hundley is. He's not Aaron Rodgers. So there definitely is some concern there, but I do think, you know, in terms of how Aaron thinks about things, I definitely think that he's smart enough to know what his worth is. And, you know, he wants to win championships, and I don't think he's going to be doing reckless things, you know, in the softball game. Personally, I'd rather see him maybe coaching like third base, you know, inside the dugout with the fence in front of him, so he doesn't get hit with like foul ball or something, but maybe they could get some extra padding when he goes up to the plate. But I think, you know, that's probably a day that Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy just kind of grit their teeth and get through. But so I do think there's some concern, but at the same time, I think it's, You have to let players have a life and have an off season, and I don't think, you know, you can go around treating him with, you know, like a boy in the bubble, I guess, to so to speak.
Yeah, to be fair, I've been to that event and other similar events before, and the players are not exactly going 100% out there. There's no such thing as a collision at the plate. These guys realize that right. It is for charity and it is for fun. Aaron Rodgers isn't the only Pro Bowler there. Randall Cobb will be there, Clint Dix, and a whole host of other players. But speaking of Jordy Nelson and his charity softball game here, Jordy Nelson was ranked 48th on the NFL Network's top 100 players list revealed on Monday. So, Chris, do you think that's too high, too low, or just right?
You know, to me this year, I feel like that's kind of just right, because I think you have to judge Jordy Nelson on the full 2016 season. And so, I mean, if you're going to go back and look at, you know, say his first 8 to 10 games, I mean, he just wasn't quite Jordy Nelson. You look at, you know, he had a lot of games where one stat I really look at, Stevers, is not just yards per reception, but yards per target. You know, how efficient are you doing each time you're targeted? And he had some games where early in the season, he had 3.5 yards per target, 2.9 yards per target. He only had a couple of games over 10 yards, you know, in the first, I think, 12 weeks. At the end of the season, you know, those numbers really started peaking. And, you know, by the end of the year, I think it's pretty safe to say Jordy Nelson was one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So if he had played that way over an entire 16-game season, you know, I definitely think that number should have been higher. But I think with the way he kind of played over the first half of the year, feeling himself out, I think he obviously produced at a much lower level. So I think if you're taking the whole season into consideration, I think 48 is about right. But it, in all honesty, I've never really put a ton of stock in the NFL top 100. Just that I think there's been a lot of players that get overrated or underrated over the years. I mean, the fact that Tim Tebow was on it one year, I really don't put too much stock in it. But as far as where Jordy Nelson ranks this year, I think it's pretty normal. But next year, if he can play the way he did kind of over the latter stretch of the season, I would expect him to rank a lot higher.
Jordy Nelson also received attention when wide receivers coach Luke Getsy was quoted in an article by ESPN this week saying Nelson could be even better 2 years removed from knee surgery. So, Chris, do you think that would be realistic for Jordy Nelson?
Oh, I absolutely think that that's realistic. I think when you look back at players who've had, those types of injuries, knee injuries, you know, the first year, especially for like wide receivers, quarterbacks, outside of Adrian Peterson, who, you know, he's obviously a freak in himself. You know, those players, the second season after, that's really when, they get back and almost are better than before. Like Wes Welker is one example, looking at a receiver that I can really remember. He obviously is a little bit different than Jordy, relying on quickness. But, you know, his first year after he had that pretty similar injury to Jordy Nelson at the end of the season, his first year back, he had 800-some yards, wasn't quite the same. And then the next year came back and had 1,500 yards. So I really do think that we are going to see a much better Jordy Nelson this year. I think we're going to see him in the slot. I think that was something that the Packers kind of discovered last year as a position where he can be really successful. The thing that I really liked about Jordy Nelson at the end of the year is, you know, when he was out there and when he's always been at his best, the Packers could always get that 6, 7, 8, 9 yard comeback route to him. That was anytime they wanted, pretty much, you know, first down, second down. And at the start of the year, teams didn't really respect his speed. And when you could see Jordy Nelson getting that cushion on those short routes, that's kind of when I felt like he was back. So this year, I really expect Jordy to get his yards per reception number up. I expect him to get about 100 receptions, about 1,500 yards. I don't know statistically if he's going to do, you know, much better next year, except for I think his yards per reception will be up. But, you know, there's just so many talented receivers. I don't expect him to have a 1,600-1,700 yard season. But I think in terms of efficiency, which used to be one of Jordy Nelson's, you know, high points, one of his most successful areas, I think he's going to be really, truly elite this season. I really do.
I certainly hope that's the case. Chris, kind of going off script here, but I'm not sure if you saw on social media right before we went on the show, we got a question when we publicized the show on social media on Twitter from Bob Bruce on Twitter, a question here. He asks, who is going to score the most Packers points in 2017? You know, basically excluding Aaron Rodgers, the guy throwing the football, and excluding Mason Crosby, who's going to kick all the extra points. Basically, the question is, who's going to score the most touchdowns? And I would assume Jordy Nelson would be in contention, but do you think anybody else could challenge him for that in 2017?
You know, there's a few guys I think that could challenge for that spot. I think Devontae Adams, you know, he was up in double-digit touchdowns. And you actually just wrote a piece for Cheesehead TV not too long ago advocating for the Packers to consider a contract extension for him. And so I'm maybe a little higher on him than some other of our followers. So I think Devontae Adams, with his size and especially his ability to, you know, get off man coverage in the red zone, I think he's a guy that, you know, could challenge for that. I also think that Martellus Bennett is a guy that could come in. It would not surprise me at all to see him catch 10 to 15 touchdown passes this year. I think, you know, with his free agent signing, I really like how, you know, he's kind of made it a point to try to make a connection with Aaron Rodgers. And I think that Aaron, you know, obviously he's kind of done that as well, kind of like he did with Jared Cook last season. Ultimately, I do think Jordy Nelson's going to be that guy. Definitely can see him scoring about 14, 15 touchdowns this year. But I think Davante Adams has a chance. I think Martellus Bennett has a chance. And truthfully, I think Ty Montgomery could have a chance as well, too, this year. You know, with him being the starting running back, getting more carries, I could see him, you know, having 8 to 10 rushing touchdowns. And who knows, he could have 3 or 4 receiving as well. I'm hoping that the Packers, you know, find a way to use him more as a pass catcher, you know, out of the backfield this year as well. So those are kind of the 4 guys I would focus on. But my prediction would still be that Jordy would score the most touchdowns.
All good options, and I could buy all of them. Chris, Packers OTAs resume again today. Assuming Clay Matthews is back from a personal absence last week, this will be the first time this year we see him in action. Where do you anticipate we'd see him line up?
You know, I think we'll see him quite a bit at outside linebacker, but I remember right after the season, Mike McCarthy, it might have been at the combine where he was talking about it, but he said something to the effect of, you know, Clay Matthews is at his best when he's moving around to different positions, and I truly believe that. I don't think, you know, Clay's a good pass rusher. He is. He's a good edge rusher. But I do think he has lost a little bit of that speed, and that, you know, he can't just beat guys around the edge with that quickness quite like he used to. He still can. But I think last year it showed, you know, with his shoulder injury, you know, how important his hand usage is now at this point in his career. He needs some of those extra kind of veteran moves to get pressure. But one thing I've always thought about Clay Matthews is, as good as he is as a pass rusher off the edge, I've always thought he's actually a better blitzer. I don't know if there's anybody in the National Football League that is more effective blitzing, you know, up the middle when Dom Capers kind of has him, you know, stunting up the middle and doing those stunts. I think Clay Matthews executes those as well as anybody in the National Football League. So I think, you know, yeah, definitely the Packers are going to need him, you know, on the edge this year, depending on, you know, the development of Kyler Fackrell, if Beagle can, you know, contribute, Jaron Elliott, if some of those guys can step up. But I do think we are going to see him at inside linebacker, and I don't think, you know, it's going to be because the other guys are necessarily ineffective. I just think that's the best way to, you know, get the most out of Clay Matthews. I just don't think he's a guy that, you know, should play right outside linebacker 50 snaps a game. I think he should play some at right, you know, move him to the left side, find the best matchups for him, you know, move him inside and let him blitz, let him take on some blockers. So that's where I think, you know, Clay's going to be the most successful. The thing I've always admired about Clay Matthews is, to me, I think he could play any linebacker spot in a 4-3 or a 3-4. You know, outside linebacker, inside linebacker, you know, Wilson, he has that ability to, you know, play all those different spots. He's a very versatile player, and he's always had kind of a nose for the ball. And I don't know how any other way to describe it. You know, it's Charles Woodson comes to mind. He just, for whatever reason, he had a way of batting down passes, forcing fumbles, getting interceptions. And Clay Matthews has that same, you know, playmaking ability. And I think if the Packers limit him to just one position, I think they limit, you know, the ability for him to make those big plays. So I don't think he's going to play inside linebacker as much as he did, you know, in 2014 or in 2015. But I do think we're going to see him there situationally. And a lot of it, I think, is going to be, you know, about that blitz and that inside pressure, because I think the Packers did really miss that at the end of last season.
Last question, Chris, before we let you go. Since our last episode of Railbird Central, ESPN revealed the signing bonuses received by all the Packers undrafted rookies, none for more than $5,000. So my question, do you think the Packers need to pay more to lure better undrafted free agents?
You know, I don't necessarily think that they do. You know, and this year was a little bit of an off year. I mean, they've had other years where, you know, they've given out $20,000 in signing bonuses, $25,000 in signing bonuses. You know, they definitely, I know Minnesota, you know, they spent a lot on undrafted players this year. They even gave, you know, some of their undrafted rookies, you know, guaranteed money beyond signing bonus, which is something the New England Patriots actually did this year too. I think the Patriots spent pretty close as much as you can because they only had four draft picks. But with Green Bay, I think for one, I think that it's always going to be a top destination for undrafted rookies because the Packers, for one, I think their coaching staff is one of the best in the league at developing, you know, young talent. You know, you look at their staff and really compared to most NFL teams, there's very little turnover, you know, even with, you know, position coaches and assistants. So I think the Packers have a good reputation for developing those players. Even they have a lot of guys that end up not making their team, but then go on to make other teams after training camp. So I think players realize that they're going to get a fair chance and they're going to be, you know, developed in Green Bay. So I think that's one reason why this year they didn't need to, you know, put out a ton in signing bonus to get the players that they want. You know, personally, in my mind too, I think part of it is, you know, when they made the deal, I think it was with the Broncos in the draft. Sorry if I can't quite remember it, but it was they picked up an extra seventh round pick late. That's what they used to draft, you know, Devontae Mays, the running back from Utah State. And so to me, I mean, that's a guy that they might have looked at as one of their top priorities in undrafted free agency and then said, well, we have this late pick, let's just take him. So maybe if he hadn't gotten drafted, he might have been a guy that they said, hey, here's a $20,000 signing bonus. We really want you here. The other reason I don't think they invested as heavily this year in undrafted free agents is the Packers actually signed some veteran free agents this year. They signed two veteran tight ends, veteran offensive linemen and Jari Evans. They got Ricky Jean-Francois. They signed Devon House. I mean, that's five veterans. And, you know, for Ted Thompson, that's a pretty big free agent class. So, and a pretty big draft class too. So I don't think that there were players that, you know, they really felt that they had to go spend a ton of money on. So, you know, I really, with them, I think their reputation for opportunity is always going to funnel players their way. So I don't think they need to get in big spending matches unless they really feel it's necessary. And this year they obviously didn't have any players that, you know, they were pounding on the table for to spend that money, I guess.
A lot of good analysis on that last question. A lot of reasons I hadn't necessarily thought of that way. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. Greatly appreciate. Glad to have you on the show. Glad to have you with Cheesehead TV. And we'll do it again sometime, all right?
Yeah, sounds great, Brian. I had a lot of fun, and I'm always down to talk some Packers. So anytime you want to, give me a call.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Chris Peterson, one of Cheesehead TV's newest writers, joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. Glad to have him join us. Glad to have you, the listener, join us as we continue on with the show.
What the hell's going on out here?
I'll try to tell you, Vince, in our Packers news segment, that list of signing bonuses we just referenced earlier, I have the breakdown. I used to look at which players had the highest signing bonuses and think, well, this player is a higher priority for the Packers. They must have evaluated him a little bit better than anyone else, but that's not necessarily the case in 2017. There's basically an 11-way tie for the largest signing bonus among the undrafted rookies this year, each of whom received $5,000, basically enough to cover their moving expenses to Green Bay. But here's the 11 players in alphabetical order. Defensive lineman Jonathan Calvin, wide receiver Michael Clark, offensive lineman Thomas Evans, offensive lineman Jeff Gray, linebacker Cody Hyman, quarterback Taysom Hill, defensive lineman Izza Lunsford, offensive lineman Adam Pankey, tight end Aaron Peck, cornerback Lindsey Pipkins, and punter Justin Vogel. One player got a $3,500 signing bonus, that's cornerback David Rivers. One player got a $2,500 signing bonus, wide receiver Monte Crockett. And one player got a $2,000 signing bonus, cornerback Donatella Brown. That's the smallest of the signing bonuses. The rest of the undrafted rookies all received no signing bonus. All but one of them was offered a contract after rookie minicamp when they all received tryouts. That one player was running back Khalif Phillips, who was signed prior to rookie minicamp. But these players had to just consider themselves lucky they received an NFL contract at all. But just because they didn't receive a signing bonus doesn't mean they won't get a legitimate shot to make the team. The Packers will give them an honest chance just like anyone else, but they just have to earn it. You know, one of the notable players to make the roster upon after being a tryout player was wide receiver Jarrett Boykin, who played for the Packers for a couple seasons and then left as a free agent. So there you go. There's the latest on the Packers and the news that broke since our last episode of Railbird Central. We had a little break for Memorial Day on Monday, so thanks for your patience and coming back to listen to us here. And we'll wrap it up with one last segment.
The day ahead.
After Packers players received a long Memorial Day weekend off from practice, they returned to Green Bay on Wednesday to resume organized team activities. However, Wednesday's practice is not open to the public. It will be held just behind closed doors inside the Don Hutson Center with little to no media coverage. But the next practice open to the public and the media will be on Thursday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time at Clark Hinkle Field, and that'll be preceded by Mike McCarthy's weekly off-season press conference at 10:10 a.m. Central Time to be streamed live at Packers.com. Assistant coaches speak later in the day, also stream live at Packers.com somewhere around 4 p.m. So lots of Packers content tomorrow. You know, you'll see a lot of coverage in the media and things like that. Packers practice today just behind closed doors. So going to have to wait till tomorrow till you get the really bulk of what's happening this week and hear it from the players as the media converges, interviews them, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll talk more about that on our next episode of Railbird Central on Friday. Railbird Central typically airs every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, excluding holidays like Monday this week, and excluding Friday when we're going to push it up 15 minutes earlier on Friday. Like I said, from time to time, occasionally, we'll be doing that as my work schedule demands it. I don't mean to be confuse anyone out there. But in order to do this show, we're going to have to be a little bit flexible. So we'll see those of you who listen to the live edition of the show, we'll see you 15 minutes earlier on Friday. Those of you listening to the podcast, not going to affect you at all. We'll see you later, folks. Have a good Monday. Pardon me, Wednesday. We'll talk to you again 2 days from now. I leave you today with a song called, if I can find it here, Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go. Okay.